Merkel Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Okay, I'll reload it.
Yep. Okay, tonight I have a great guest coming on. I have Amy. Amy, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Every time I do a recording on a Saturday, I tend to have a little bit more energy because I'm not just coming home from a 12-hour work shift. So it's kind of nice.
Definitely.
You emailed me. Actually, it wasn't that long ago, actually. It was back in April. And you have quite a few experience here that you listed with UFOs, and you also have some more, you know, demonic haunting type story you'd like to share. And so let's just start off with the UFO sightings that you've had. Where were you when this happened, and just kind of walk us into it.
Sure. So the first time I saw anything, I was about 11 or 12. So this is like 94, 95. And I can't remember if it was early spring or if it was like just transitioning into fall, but it was after school and I was learning to play tennis and I was taking lessons at this place called Vic Braden's Tennis Academy. And this is down in Orange County, California, in a gated community known as Cota de Casa. And at this point, I'd been playing for like a couple of years and I was starting to get really good. I had like hit a new level. And my coach at the time, Roy, he noticed this. And so he was like, hey, stay after class and we'll rally. And for people that don't play tennis, rally is basically you're just hitting the ball back and forth without a serve. And so we were doing that. And the way the courts were situated, this is like, so it's called tennis college. And there's multiple tennis courts. There's a huge viewing deck. There was something that was like, you know, like the baseball practice things, they shoot the balls out at you and you hit them with the bat. They had something similar to that. So this is like a tennis compound, really. And the court that we were on was just outside the like pro shop and this viewing deck. And my mom was on the viewing deck and the viewing deck like only went out like about halfway over the court. And so she was on the same side of the court as my coach Roy. So they were like both facing me. And I'm pretty sure he hit the ball at me, but I didn't hit it because I was like beyond the courts. There's all these trees and these trees back up to what's known as Tribuco Canyon. And I was waiting for the ball. And then all of a sudden, like, I see this huge light, and it was like, it had to have been about as long as a football field. It was massive. It was maybe 15 feet tall. It was dead silent. It was totally stealthy. It didn't make any noise. And it was so smooth. Like, it, I mean, I know, like, when you see a plane in the sky, they look smooth too, but this looks so much smoother in terms of like how it was moving. And it was pretty close. Like, the thing couldn't have been any farther than like 200 feet away. And it was massive. And like, I was holding on to my racket, and I could hear my mom calling for me, and I could hear Roy, but I could not respond to them because I was just so wrapped up in what I was seeing. It was just this huge, long cylindrical light. Now, I was looking at it, and I wouldn't be able to tell you like what the shape of it was. Like, sometimes people take pictures or they videotape like something that looks like a cigar. That was definitely the shape, but like whether it was a square, like I was only seeing the profile of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was like really, really bright. It was like white in the center, and it's like almost like looking at the sun. Like, if you were to look at the sun for a second, it almost had that appearance, but it wasn't like radiating light. It was, the light was like contained within this shape. Hmm. And it probably took like 10 seconds for the whole thing to pass. But I was just like, I was just staring at it, and they didn't know what was going on with me. My mom was like calling at me because she thought that I was like hyperventilating or like having a seizure or something like that. And I snapped to it. And like, I just remember my coach, I was like, well, that's enough for today. And I was just kind of stunned. Like, I just didn't, I mean, I had heard of UFOs. Like, I've always been open-minded. My family's very open-minded. At the time, I used to like that show Sightings or whatever, but I was still stunned because I wasn't ever expecting to see anything like that. Anyway, we got back in the car, and my mom's like, what was going on with you? Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm okay, but I saw this light, you know, and I told her about it, and she was, you know, she believed me. She didn't doubt me. I mean, she saw it happening to me, you know, like she saw what that I was, that something was going on, but she would have never, no one would ever be, oh, she must be looking at a UFO. She thought I was like dying or something. So we went home, and then later that night, on the news, there had been people in Tustin, which was it's still a part of Orange County. It's just a town farther north. And this thing was traveling north. People in Tustin had seen some kind of light. And I find it really improbable that it would be a different one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the first one.
Let me ask you a question. When you saw this, you said it was 15 feet tall, about that?
Yeah, it must have been like 15 feet tall, but like 300 feet long.
Gotcha. That's gigantic, you know?
It was huge. It was just this huge light. It like took up like pretty much like all my vision, you know? It was just there.
And so nobody else said they saw it. I mean, your coach, he was after that, he's like, okay, I guess that's enough for today. Do you think that he saw anything, or do you think he was just like, okay, this girl's acting weird?
No, it was behind them. Like, I was facing them. They were facing me, and this thing was behind. So like behind the court that we were on was another court. Then these trees, these like, I guess, I don't know, oak trees maybe behind the courts, and then the hills. And this thing was behind the trees. So they wouldn't have been able to see it, but they saw me reacting to something. But they, you know, like, I'm sure he thought I was just tired because I had already practiced today. I don't know what he thought, but gotcha. I'm assuming that's what he thought.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty fascinating that it happened in the middle of the day, and that it was, you said it was light, but it wasn't emitting light, right? It was like kind of contained.
Yeah, it's not like okay, so like the trees that are like in front of it, right? There was no light cast onto the trees. It was self-contained, like it had like a, how do I describe this? It's kind of difficult to describe.
I'm sure.
I don't know. Like
maybe
kind
like
of
a glow stick or something. Like it's lit up, but it doesn't really emit light onto other things.
Yeah, or like a like those like the swords in like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like more like that. Like that. Like where you see like the border. You see the border of the light, and then the actual light on the inside, but it wasn't emitting light. So it's not like rays or anything.
Okay. Gotcha. Well,
yeah,
I mean, welcome to the world, 11 or 12 year old girl, you know? Like,
yeah.
And that's just the beginning of some things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, like most of the things that have happened during the day. So like the next time I saw something was like years, this is like 8 years ago. So I was like 27. So it was a huge gap. I was living in San Francisco at the time. I was living on Haight Street and Lyon. And I was living with my friend. I'm going to give her a different name. I was living with my friend, Amanda. I was like in the bath and she was out on the deck. I heard her like screaming bloody murder. I was like washing my hair. And so I was like, oh my God, like I think someone's attacking her. So I like leapt out of the tub and I ran out there and I've got like soap in my hair and I run out to her on the deck and she's pointing up in the sky and she's looking up and she's like, what is that? And I looked and it was just this orb, this blue orb, really, really high up in the atmosphere. Like when you're out in the country and you're stargazing, you know, you see the satellites, you know, it was like way up high like that.
Okay.
But it was this perfect blue orb. And it, given the distance, you know, this thing must have been huge. Now, to me, it looked like a blue orb, but I realized like, I don't know, perhaps that could have been something metallic, but it was just sitting there. And we were like, you know, watching the clouds go over it. And it would stayed stationary in the same spot. And then eventually some clouds passed and it was gone. So that was like the second time I saw something. The third time, this one to me is the most interesting because I haven't heard, actually, this is part of the reason why I wanted to share, because I was thinking like maybe somebody else out there that listens to your show has seen something similar to this, because I haven't ever heard anyone describe something like this. So I was living in San Diego at the time and my dad lives in Scottsdale. So I was driving out to visit him and this is like, I don't know, 10, 11 at night, something like that. And I got this feeling to look to my left, right? So I'm headed east. So I'd be looking north. And in the northern direction, there's like this strand of dark blue lights, like royal blue. Okay. Like really, really blue. And they're not like evenly spaced apart or anything like that. But the way this thing is moving, I want to say maybe it's like 30 feet long, something like that. And the like tail end of it would splay open and then shut. And when it shut, it would project itself forward. It would like shoot forward. It kind of reminded me of like a water bug or something when they spread their legs and then they squeeze them together and they shoot forward in the water. That's exactly how this was moving. And this, you know, I also didn't hear any noise and this like shot forward like several times and then it was just completely out of sight, like maybe four or five times. So that was the third thing that I've seen. And that's the one that's at night. And then there's another one at night. But the next one that I saw, this was during the day. This was broad daylight. This is in like on the flight path for the Phoenix International Airport. This was like 4 years ago. So I was attending Mesa Community College and I had a science class in the morning. And between my science class and my science lab, there was a break. So typically, like, I would go to my car, I'd eat a snack, I'd fiddle around on my phone, whatever. So I was sitting in my car and I get this feeling to look out the window. So I look out my windshield and, you know, it's a really bright blue, like typical Arizona day. Sky is like sunny, there's no clouds, nothing. And I see this blue orb, and this blue orb is probably like 200 to 300 feet up in the air. And then pretty close to me. So like, meaning that like it was 200, 300 feet off the air. If you were to like step 20 feet in front of my car and then go straight up. So I'm watching this thing and I'm like, wow, like what is that? And it looks like perhaps it was the size of like, if an average size person were to, or average size man were to like hunker down and get in the fetal position real tight, or like do a cannonball in the pool, it's probably about that size. Okay. So it's pretty large. But again, this is like a blue light. It's like it's kind of like the white thing, the first light that I saw, but it's blue.
Okay.
And I'm watching it and I am out of my car at this point. And then all of a sudden this other orb just appears. It just appears out of nothing. And they continue to fly in like this southwestern trajectory. So like the thing about this is like, so later that day I had gone home. I was living with my dad at the time and I told him about it. He was like, well, maybe it was just an airplane or something. I'm like, no, because Mesa is east of the Phoenix International Airport. So you see airplanes flying in and flying out all day long. Like it's really common sighting. I know what a plane is. And then on top of that, Mesa Community College is right next door to a hospital. So there's these helicopters constantly going in and out and they make noise. You know, they've got some very distinctive features. That was not this. Plus like this, the other one just appeared out of nowhere. And, you know, these aren't like, I don't know, they didn't seem like crafts, but yet they were intelligent because they were, you know, it's like the way they were flying with intention. They were going somewhere. And I feel like they wanted to be seen because otherwise, why would you be appearing like that in like a really busy metropolitan area unless you wanted to be seen?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. Also, if you want me to slow down or you want to ask me questions, that's fine.
No, go ahead. Continue.
Okay. So that was that one. And then, later that same year, I decided to go to this, meditation retreat in Hawaii, to study this style of meditation known as Vipassana. And, at this retreat, it's basically silent meditation for 10 days. Like you meditate all day. And I was like, cool, I'm going to do that. And my friend had also recently moved out to Hawaii, to the Big Island, to, you know, buy a property and stuff. So I was like, cool, I'll see her too. So I'm there. And this is a retreat where like they did have some housing on there, but they were like really primitive structures. But the majority of us were camping. Okay. So there was this main house on the property and that's where the kitchen was. So like all the meditators, everybody there that's there for the sit, they eat there, you know, three times or twice a day. And then, you know, then none of the meditators have anything to do with that area. That area is really more for the volunteers that keep the camp running. So the women and the men are separated. So the women's camp, you know, we all had our tents set up under this tarp. Okay. And we're also in the jungle of this area of the Hawaiian island known as Pahoa. So it's just like, everything's off the grid. You know, really dense, really lush, beautiful, beautiful place. There's also not, you don't have like street lights and stuff like that out there. There's really not a lot of light pollution on the island in general. So one night, and I feel like this is like several days in, you know, I was exhausted. Like you'd think that sitting and meditating is not exhausting. It's totally exhausting, especially if you've never done it before, and I hadn't. So every night at 9:30, when the day's meditations were all done, you know, I would pass out and I'd get my sleep, you know? But this one night, it always, so this is a rainforest and it rains a lot. And you know, when it rains on a tarp, it's pretty loud. But I had, you know, grown accustomed to it now, like it didn't bother me, but this one night, like it was like somebody just cranked up the volume, you know, they turned it up to 11 and I just shot up out of bed. But when I shot up, you know, I was in this light and it was a really, really bright light. Like it looked like stadium lights, that kind of brightness. And I'm listening and like every person in my camp, like I hear snoring, you know, like nobody's rustling around. Nobody appears to be awake, but there's this light. And I'm like, huh. And then it dims out. And then like a minute later, it comes back on again. And I was thinking like, that's really weird that they would put on, like the people that are running this meditation retreat, that they would put on lights that bright, like in the middle of the night, like 1 o'clock in the morning or something. And so I was like, okay, that's weird. And I was like trying to ignore it, but it just, this light kept coming on and fading off, fading on and fading off. And I had a little camp clock and I started to like time it. And these are not like, it wasn't, you know, like you have a light on a timer. So like, okay, it'll go off at this time and it's really regulated. The pattern of it coming on and coming off was not at all regulated. Like it was always approximately a minute in between, but it varied, you know, it'd be like, oh, this is like 46 seconds and now it's back on again, or it's 54 seconds and then it's back on again, or it's off again, whatever. And I just like, I don't know, I kept getting this feeling like something was outside. And something wanted me to come outside and it felt dark. This is the only time I've ever, like, aside from like the hauntings and stuff, this is the only time I felt like if I had gone outside, that something would have happened to me. That not necessarily that whatever was outside was evil necessarily, but just that something would have happened to me that would have been foreign and scary. And so I did not go outside, and I eventually I got back to sleep. And so breakfast the next morning at like 6 a.m., I go to the kitchen window and I knock on it. Cause so it's a silent retreat. You don't talk to other students that are studying with you, but you can talk to the people that are running it in case you need anything. So I knock on the door and I want to ask them about the light. And I really want to ask them about it more because I just want to like make myself feel better. Like nothing weird happened. So I was like, hey, I just wanted to see if maybe you guys could keep the light off that, you know, was turned on last night in the middle of the night. Cause it was so bright, like couldn't sleep. And the girl that had met me at the door, like twisted up her face, like gave me like a weird look and she just walked away. I was like, okay, that's a weird response. And, then, she came back and the manager was like, there's no light. There's no lights anywhere on the property. The only lights that are in the property are right here, like in this building. And the distance between the building and where our camp was like hundreds of feet apart. Plus there's like huge trees and bushes and flowers and stuff in between. So there's no light on this property. There's no light on the road. There's no light anywhere on any of the surrounding properties. It's kind of primitive out there, you know? And I just like, I don't know. My heart kind of sank when I heard that. Cause I was like, damn, like that something really was there. Like something was there. So yeah, that was the last time that I like saw anything. I mean, that wasn't like a sighting like out in the sky, but it was, I don't know, like, I guess on theme for what's happened with me, like these encounters with light in some form, you know?
You know, with these UFO sightings that you had, I want to ask you, it's usually one of the last questions I ask people, and I want to ask you this right away. What are your thoughts on what UFOs are to begin with?
Oh, you know, it's kind of changed over time. It's actually changed recently, actually on account of listening to like your show and like other shows out there. I used to think that these were crafts that were made by other intelligent civilizations outside the planet. Okay. But like I started, you know, listening to other people's experiences and stuff where things would just appear out of nowhere. And like, I've seen that before. And then like thinking about, okay, this is like interdimensional. And then I've heard things where it's like, they're not light. They're not like beings from other planets. These are like demons, you know, this is like a spiritual thing. And that kind of got to me. Cause I was like, well, you know, it's true. Like I never saw a craft. I've only ever seen light, you know, and like, if, you know, Lucifer is the bearer of light, you know, I'm like, I don't know, maybe yeah. That is maybe this is a spiritual thing and not an extraterrestrial thing, or maybe it's both. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they are. All I know is that, you know, 4 out of the 5 times I did not feel anything malevolent. It was just fascinating. Like I was, something inside me told me to look, something inside me wanted me to experience this, you know? And then one time it did feel malevolent. And so I didn't want to participate. So in that way, like, I do wonder if maybe it's spiritual, you know, and not the other thing.
Yeah. And I've definitely heard that before with the whole spiritual aspect. And it's hard to wrap your mind around when it comes to this kind of stuff, because, you know, if it's spiritual, how does that even work? You know what I mean? Cause it's just so different. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you said that the 4 out of the 5 times you didn't feel afraid or anything like that. And like you said, I mean, it might be both. Maybe there are UFOs that come from other galaxies or something like that. And that's real. And maybe that it is also a spiritual thing too. When you saw the stream, I think you called them, they're blue lights. They're like a stream of blue lights.
Yeah.
Those lights that you saw, was it like one straight line of lights? And then at the end, it kind of spread out. Is that how you described it?
Yeah. It was like, it's just a line. But then if you were to like split a hair, you know, that the tail end,
yeah,
I guess the back end that was closer to me would open, but not curl, you know, it would just open. There was like a slight bend to the arc, and then it would snap and it would shoot forward.
Would you think that, all right. So, you know, we talked about it being extraterrestrial, we talked about it being, spiritual. What about organic? When you describe what you're telling me, to me, it seems like it almost has its own, I don't know, motions. The motions it has is almost like it's in charge of itself. Almost like you said, like a water, what'd you say? It was like a water spider or something like that, the way it shoots itself.
Like a water, yeah, like a water bug.
Yeah.
Whatever they're called, yeah.
Yeah, and so like, and
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, honestly, like, I think anything's possible. Like, I've always had an open mind about all kinds of stuff like this, because I feel like so many people report on it, like it has to be real. Not everybody's a liar,
right?
You know, and like, but within that, we still don't know. Like, those of us that know that stuff exists, we still don't know what it is. So like, to me, it's totally open for interpretation. It could be, I mean, heck, everything that I encountered could be, you know, a living organic entity, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I definitely always got the sense that this was intelligent. Like, every single one of them, I felt intelligent. There's some kind of force behind it, you know, and, you know, intelligence, I believe, has a spiritual basis. And I also believe it has, you know, an organic basis as well, or expression, you know, so maybe what I saw was just the spiritual, like, I don't know. I guess I feel like, yeah, it's intelligent. I don't know if it's a living entity or what.
Okay.
I wish I could answer that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We're just hypothesizing here.
Sure.
But, you know, that whole experience you had with that, you know, organic looking stream of lights, Did it just disappear? Or did it just move off out of the distance? How did that whole situation end?
So it just kept progressing forward until I couldn't see it anymore.
Okay.
And it was like within five like bursts, it was gone. Hmm. And it was like, you know, going, progressing like along, it was headed east, you know, because the highway eight runs east west. So it was just like shoot, gone.
So it moved pretty fast.
It did. Yeah. It was, way, you know, I was traveling probably like 80 miles an hour, and it was like, it schooled me like in this matter of seconds. So, yeah.
Wow. See, I was picturing it moving slower. For some reason, I was thinking it was slow moving through the sky. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody's ever seen anything like that. That's really interesting.
I don't know. That was my first inclination. I was like, I should contact that show. Because I kind of wanted to see if like anybody had ever said that. Because yeah, it was really weird, unique experience.
Absolutely.
It was unique even in terms of what I've encountered. So.
Yeah. Before we move on to the more haunting demonic experiences that you had, you mentioned that you were in Hawaii and you were on a type of meditation, you know, retreat. And mm-hmm. you said that you weren't used to meditating and you were exhausted after the first day. What about meditation exhausted you on the first day? Because I mean, my assumption was meditation's relaxing, it's chill, but what about it that puts you in a state of mind where it just takes so much energy?
Oh, it takes a lot of energy. So I had gone out there. I found Vipassana because I watched a movie called Dhamma Brothers, which is basically these violent inmates were exposed to this style of meditation and they healed, you know, they became remorseful for the things that they had done. They had their lives improved dramatically, even though they were still in prison, and it was very effective. And I was like, wow, if it was effective for them, it'll be effective for me. Cause I've had depression actually since I was around 11. I've had really, really severe depression. And so I was kind of desperate at this point. I wanted to go and try it. And to sit at home and sit for 5 minutes to an hour in meditation, that's one thing. But this is you go for 10 days and you become a monk. You eat twice a day. There's no talking. You meditate basically from 4:30 in the morning until 9:30 at night with those two breaks. And you know, when you're alone in your car or just with yourself in general, you're aware that you're thinking, you're aware that your mind is always going. Okay. But when you're in that environment, the silence is deafening, and that the voice in your head, the thoughts, it becomes so loud and you're trying to focus, and you become acquainted with what's known in the meditation community as the monkey mind. It's just always going, and you just keep trying to bring it back to your breath. You keep trying to bring it back to this sensation, and it's just trying to calm the mind, trying to get accomplished what you're trying to accomplish can be exhausting, especially if you have never done it before. And I had gone from never meditating, nada, to meditating for 10 days, you know, over 12 hours a day.
Wow.
You know, plus like you're sitting there and your body gets like, you have pain, you know, you're not used to sitting for 16 hours a day on the ground with your legs crossed. So you're like, your back hurts. Like it's an intense experience. You're learning a new type of mental exercise. That's essentially what it is. It's just mental exercise. So it's, you wouldn't think that it would be. I mean, maybe other people don't experience it that way, but for me, I was like, yeah, 9:30, I was like out, just done.
I'm sure.
You know?
I'm absolutely sure. I mean, once you said sitting cross-legged on a hard ground for that long, yep, that's exhausting to me. Cause I got a horrible back, and if I sat cross-legged on my couch for 30 minutes, I'd have some severe pain. And to do that for that long, holy cow, yeah. Now, let me ask you this question. I know this is off topic, but and we'll get back to the show in a second here. But I want to ask you this question. With meditating like that, is it tiring in the sense that did you have a hard time not falling asleep? Because I think I would.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. It's interesting. Like, I think everybody should do these courses because they're free and it has nothing to do with religion. People of all religions come and they practice this style of meditation, but it is a mental exercise. And it's funny, like when you, as the observer, okay, as the observer of the person that is thinking all of the things, so there's the separation. It's like becoming acquainted with your soul. Okay. And you're now looking out at the activity of your brain from your soul's perspective, your brain will start doing all kinds of things to make you stop. It's like, it'll make you tired. You'll start getting cravings for things. You'll start really battling with the pain in your back or wherever it's going on in your body, or you'll start itching everywhere. Like there's your brain will come up with all these distractions, you know? So that's just part of it, actually. Like, and even when the 10 days were over, when you finally get to talk to the other meditators, you find out that, man, we're all so much alike. Everybody goes through the same things. Everybody's mind was driving them crazy. You know what I mean? They're just trying to learn this new technique.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other day I was driving my truck and I was kind of thinking about similar things. I was thinking to myself, I wonder what it would be like if I took a week off from work, like a vacation week, and I went away by myself, you know, up in the mountains, you know, in a cabin, no TV, nothing, just me in the woods. Mm-hmm. I wonder what it would be like, you know, mentally for me, because I move so fast and I do so much stuff and it's just constantly movement for me that I wonder what it would feel like anymore, just slowing down to the point where I have literally nothing to do for 7 days straight. And it's just me by myself and my thoughts. And it actually terrified me. It actually terrified me to think that I'd be alone by myself that long. And I'd actually have time to think about my actual thoughts. And it's like, that's kind of scary to think about when you're so used to going through the motions of day in and day out, run for 20 hours a day, get 4 hours of sleep half the time, and you're back at it again. And, you know, it's, yeah. Anyways, let's get...
Yeah, no, it's true. It's really an interesting, I think, you know, like if you were to do that, I'd highly recommend going to some kind of, meditation retreat, because it gives you the discipline. There's a discipline in examining those thoughts.
Let's keep it moving here. You've had these haunting experiences and it's pretty fascinating. So why don't you just walk us into how this whole thing started for you? And this was, all these happen after the UFOs, or they kind of overlap each other?
They do overlap. All of this kind of started out at my grandmother's ranch, or my grandparents' ranch, when I was a kid. This is in an area of Arizona called Tulum, Arizona, and they had a ranch. It's like 60 acre ranch, and they had multiple buildings, and I loved it there. There were tons of animals. There were peacocks and a donkey and ducks and cats and dogs and just tons of life. And in the main house, you know, there was a long rectangle, and the kitchen and the dining room are kind of in the front half, like where you would enter the house. And then there was this tiny little room that we called the ante room. I don't know why it was called that. That's just what it was called. And there was a doorway, and once you passed that doorway, it would open up into this long hallway, and all the bedrooms were off this hallway and the living room and whatnot. And at the very end of the hallway was the bathroom. And that door was always kept shut because there were some cats that like couldn't go outside, and, you know, some animals that didn't get along with each other. So it was just a way to cordon them off. So that door was always shut. When I was a kid though, like I loved this place. Everything about this place felt great, except the end of that hallway. Anytime I had to go in there by myself, I just like dreaded it. That was something that always stayed with me up until the property finally was sold to another family. So flash like, and also I'll mention this, like when I was a kid, like I had heard stories about, you know, there was a period of time in the 70s. And I think this was a popular thing back in the 70s where people were like experimenting with the occult, like at parties and stuff like that. Well, my grandparents, I guess, had, you know, developed a curiosity for it. And they had like Ouija boards. My grandpa had a crystal ball. And I guess during this time, my grandmother started experimenting with something called automatic writing. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I know what that is. It's like when it's like when you kind of go into an altered state of mind and you actually write something out, right?
Yeah, or like something comes through you and writes it out. So apparently the story goes, and I actually later confirmed this with my grandmother when she was still alive. She actually did do that. And it freaked my grandfather out because it was actually fruitful. And she had, you know, like some really old school, like Gothic style writing had basically predicted what's happening in the Middle East right now.
Wow.
And it freaked my grandpa out. He crumpled up the paper and like basically threw it out. The crystal ball and the Ouija board ended up in another building on the property that was the library, basically had all their books. So that's, I feel like everything that I encountered was because of this, what had happened with them years ago. So when my grandmother passed away, maybe 5 years ago, something like that, 6 years ago. And, my mom was basically, she had prepared the property. So the property went from my grandmother to my mom and her sister. And I told you before, like my mom didn't want anyone to get hurt because there's a lot of hunters that will just like cross through people's properties out in Arizona. They're hunting quail or whatever. And she was always afraid of a lawsuit, that if someone were to like break in on the property or someone to walk across the property and there were all these bushes around, you know, that a snake would get them and bite them or whatever, and then they'd sue her. So she went in after my grandmother passed away and basically ripped out, you know, all the vegetation. Everything was just gone. So it was just like this, it looked like a dead place. And so at the time that I go out there, where this, you know, story kind of initiates, I was with my boyfriend at the time. His name was Drew. We were going to go to this sensory awareness workshop, which is, I guess, kind of a meditation technique unto itself. It was for him, and it was in Tucson, but I was like, well, we were living in San Diego. I was like, well, let's go, but I'll take you to my grandmother's ranch. We'll swing by Scottsdale, see my dad, and then we'll go to your thing. And so we drove out there, and, you know, the last time I had seen the ranch, you know, there were trees and animals, and, you know, it was teeming with life. Well, when we got there, everything was ripped out, and it was just like this dead place, and it just had a bad feeling. But regardless, I was just like, oh, it's just because the plants are gone. And anyway, so we got on the property, and when you first get on the property, the way the road is laid out, it's like an L, capital letter L that's been tipped over on its side. So on the right-hand side, there's what was called the blockhouse, just like this little square house. There was, and then to your left, there's a longhouse, where workers used to live. Then you make the right turn, and there's the library, what was my grandfather's office, and then the main house. So we drive, we park at the gate, we start walking, and I'm kind of showing him, this is the blockhouse, blah, 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 this is where this happened, et cetera. We get to the main house, and the curtains are drawn, everything's locked up. I wasn't talking to my mom at the time. I didn't have a key or anything, but I just wanted to give him kind of an outdoor tour. So we get to the area where the kitchen was, and that's on like the short end of the house, meaning that it's a rectangle, so it's on the short end. I'm like, this is the dining room, this is the kitchen where my grandmother was. And so behind the main house is like another house. So we turn the corner, and we're between the two buildings. And so, sorry, I hope I'm explaining this right. Just beyond the kitchen and the anteroom, the first door on the left was my grandmother's room. So on the long side of the house, it would be the kitchen and then my grandmother's room. And So we turn that right corner and I'm like, this is where my grandmother slept. And like, we're taking a couple steps forward and then we just stop. Like we both stopped for absolutely no reason. I don't even know why I stopped, but it was like, we just stopped, like we hit a wall. And then that second, the window, my grandmother's window, and I know the sound of this window. I've opened it a million times in my life. It just shot open. Like I heard the grating of the metal. And then I heard this like really guttural snarl. It was deep and nasty, and it was not an animal. It was not a person. Everything was clear in my field of vision. This is not, you know, it was coming from inside the house, but the house was locked up and alarmed. Well, we're just like silent. And all of a sudden I felt like this is territorial. I need to say right now that this is my place. So I like puffed up in response. And I was like, this is where my grandmother slept. This is where my grandfather stored the work boots for the men that worked out here. I was trying to verbally claim the territory that I wasn't a trespasser, that this was somehow affiliated with me. This is my place. Cause whatever it was, it felt like it was telling me that it was its place. So at this point though, like I'm puffed up, but I'm like, what am I dealing with in my head? So I start kind of backing away. I'm still talking to Drew, and I start leading him back off the property. And he kept like kind of lagging behind me and peeking his head back as he was trying to see something. And I was like, okay. And so we just kept moving him out, and we finally got into the car and we closed the doors, and I look at him and I'm like, did you hear that? And he was like, yeah, I heard that. And I was like, so you like, you know, you heard that like snarl, like growl. And he was like, no, that's not what I heard. I heard like a horse whinny and a, like the expulsion of the air, like the that kind of thing. So we both heard something. We both heard something entirely different than the other person did. But we both felt it, like, you know, we continued to talk about it after this. So anyway, we leave there, we go to stop by my dad's place. It was like a surprise thing, so he wasn't there. And we headed on down to Tucson. So I was in the hotel room and Drew is, you know, doing his workshop. And luckily, the woman that was running the workshop, you know, told him like, oh, you know, she doesn't have to pay for it. Just let her come on down so she's not locked up in the hotel room all week. And I was really grateful for that, because the whole time I was in the hotel room, I got the same exact feeling that I did whenever I was in my grandparents' house and I was faced with that hallway, because it always felt like something was watching me from the end of that hallway. And when I was in this hotel room, I felt that same feeling, like something was just staring at me. And it wasn't, you know, it was just like this, like a dark feeling, like looking at me with bad intentions kind of thing. And, so, you know, that whole week ended. We ended up going back to our apartment in San Diego, and like, you know, stuff like really hit the fan at this point. And then honestly, to backtrack a little bit, like when my grandmother was passing away, my mom was taking care of her. She had dementia. And so my mom had moved out there to take care of her and everything. Well, you know, there were several buildings full of like furniture and stuff like that. And, this is before I was dating Drew. So, you know, I was living alone, and, my mom was like, hey, you know, if you want any furniture, anything, just like, feel free to come out and get it. I made several trips to go out there. I helped take care of my grandmother on the weekends and stuff like that. So, I ended up coming back at one point with like a dresser, and I had my grandfather's watch, and then just like some other random things from the ranch. So before that visit with Drew, I had some haunting things that had happened with what I had brought back. So the dresser, I always kept my grandfather's watch on the dresser. Well, as soon as I brought that into the house, every night at about 3 a.m., and it was never like 3 a.m., 3 a.m., it was like 3:01, 3:02, 3:03, something like that. But it was around 3 a.m. that I would wake up to the sound of a clock. I did not have I didn't have a clock in the house. All I had was that watch and my cell phone. The watch, however, was dead. There's no battery in it. But what was really weird to me is that the sound that I heard of this clock was actually the exact sound of the clock that sat next to my grandmother's bed. This like old white plastic clock that glowed orange in the dark. And it just had this particular plasticky kind of sound as it would tick along. Well, that sound was coming from my dresser where my grandfather's watch was. But the thing was dead. There was no battery in it. It was impossible for it to be making any sound. But sure enough, every night, 3 a.m., I'd wake up to this ticking sound. So eventually, I actually had to get rid of that stuff. I just like gave it to the Salvation Army because I didn't want it anymore. And as soon as I did that, that activity stopped. So going forward again, after I had returned from Tucson with Drew, like, first of all, I don't think we were ever supposed to be together. So it's fine that we broke up. But I think things really took a negative turn as soon as we came back. Like, things just got really dark between us and just weird stuff was happening in the house. I was waking up with like severe, and I didn't think about this until years later. I didn't like put it together. I mean, I've always bruised easy, but like the backs of my legs just looked like somebody had just taken a bat to them. Like, I was bruised up and down. It's just like I was painted with bruises. And that happened several times. And, you know, we were always trying to figure out like what it was. And I was just like, I don't know. Maybe it's like we've been going to the beach. Maybe it's the waves like crashing on me. I don't know. So that was one thing. Another thing that happened was I woke up one morning and I walked into my living room and there were like hundreds of flies on the wall. Now, I always, you know, there were screens on the windows and I keep the windows shut at night. So I have no idea how hundreds of flies would have gotten in the apartment. But this was the other weird thing is that they weren't like flying around. They weren't moving. They were still. And they were just sitting there all over the wall. And I like walked out in the living room and my heart and my stomach just sank in my body. And I was just like, oh my God, like, what am I dealing with here? And so I, you know, went to the store. I lived right next door to an Albertsons, walked over there, grabbed a can of Raid and like proceeded to kill them all. But that was like really strange to me. That was like an omen. There was another time that Drew and I were like sitting on a couch, and the way our apartment was situated is like where we were sitting on the couch, we were looking out the front window, and out the front window, you would be able to see anybody that was walking up to the apartments. We were on the second story. And so we're sitting there and we're like talking about like getting some ice cream or whatever. And all of a sudden there's this knock, 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 right on the window, right in front of us. And there's nobody there. There's wow. No one there whatsoever. And I was just like, okay, you go get ice cream. I'm going to jump online and try to figure out how to deal with this stuff. Because that you know, that wasn't the only thing that was happening. Like, we had a cat at the time, Mr. Paws, and he was a really good kitty. Like, some cats, like, they're up all night and they're, you know, they meow a lot. But he cuddled with me every night. And there were several nights, though, that I would wake up to him yowling at the front door, not moving, just looking at the front door and doing the same repetitive meow over and over and over again. Meow, meow, meow. Like, just, and I couldn't get him to stop. There was also something else that kept happening where I would be like in the bathroom getting ready for work or whatever, and I would see like this shadow critter out of the corner of my eye leaping and bounding around in the apartment. And when this started happening, I just thought, oh, the cat is jumping up on the couch or whatever. But I would turn and look, no cat there. And then I'd go into my bedroom, cat sound asleep on the bed. But what I was seeing was like, and the reason why I thought it was a cat was because I saw like hindquarters and a tail, like a really sharp tail though. And it was black and shadowy, but I never saw the front end or the head. I always saw the back end of this thing, like jumping around on stuff. There was another night where, Drew and I, we had a really bad argument, and I got this really like dark feeling. I just thought, like, if I stay here, I'm going to get hurt. So I got a bag together and I told him I'm going to go stay at my friend Allegra's house. And so I drove over to my friend Allegra's house and I stayed the night there. And I had a really hard time getting to sleep that night because I was sleeping on her couch. I was laying there and I couldn't sleep because I just felt like something was staring at me. That same really familiar feeling. And eventually when I did go back home, Drew was like, I kind of told him like, yeah, like I had a, you know, I couldn't sleep. I told him why. And he was like, yeah, well, when you left that night, Mr. Paz and I watched this shadow figure walk after you.
Wow.
And yeah, just like, so eventually we split up. I needed to like recollect myself and my life. And so I moved out to my dad's place, to like get back in school and stuff like that. And I had not, like, I'm a Christian now, but I had not yet become a Christian. But I had started using the Lord's Prayer and I had started calling out to Jesus and the Archangel Michael. So I'd read somewhere a long time ago that Michael's the protector of Rachel in the Bible or something. So, I had started doing that and I did notice that there was a dissipation of activity. I had also put salt in the windows, particularly after the knocking incident, put salt in the windows and stuff like that. And that seemed to help a little bit. But then I moved. So I brought my cat out to my dad and things had really subsided at that point. But there was still like, I feel like some remnant energy. And also I should say like the night before I left, I said, I told whatever it was that was there, like, you can't follow me. You have to stay here. So I don't know if that was something that helped. I'm not really sure what helped. But anyway, I'm at my dad's house. I still have some of the items from my grandparents' place. Like I have some paintings that my grandmother had done. And I had one of them up next to my bed. And that thing would rattle. It would rattle on the wall. Like no fan, no air conditioner going, it would just start rattling. That creeped me out. And I lived with that for actually a couple of years, until I was a Pilates instructor and, one of my clients was a Catholic and she had referred me to this priest and he had, given me, I don't know what it is, but I'm not Catholic. But it's like it looks like a ribbon and it has the cross, stitched on it. And he kept it. It was maybe like a couple of feet long. He had it folded up in his Bible, like a Bible strap or something. I don't know what it's called, but anyway, it was this blessed item. So he gave it to me and he said, you know, put this on whatever's disturbing you in your home. And if it doesn't go away, then we'll take other measures, but just put this in your home, put it on whatever the object is until the problem ceases. So I kept it for about a week and then sure enough, it stopped. But another weird thing that happened there was, when I moved out there, I had a MacBook Pro and I was starting school and it was too old, to like accommodate a lot of the software that I had to use for my program. So I had to get a new computer. So I had a brand new MacBook Pro and these things work perfect, you know?
Yes, I do.
And it was late at night and I was like watching some video and a commercial came on and I hate commercials. So I put it on mute. So I put it on mute and then my computer hisses at me like that. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, what am I going to do? So that was probably, that was like the creepiest thing that happened at my dad's. And then I did awaken one night to knocking at my door. And I had asked my dad if he had ever had anything like that happen. And he said he did, but he said, he just excused it. Like, oh, I was just, you know, probably just dreaming or whatever. And then he also had said something like, well, I think if you talk about these things that you're inviting more of it in. you know, so I was like, oh, I don't know, but it, possibly maybe that's why stuff happens to me all the time. so then that's that kind of period of time. I've had other things happen, like, a long time ago, I was listening to Coast to Coast, and there was a gentleman on there who wrote a book called Adventures Beyond the Body, the out-of-body experience book, and he basically spells out, like, how to do it, and he had received all this benefit from doing it, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool, like, I'd like to do that. So I followed his, I followed his teaching, which is basically, like, every night you say, before bed, you say a mantra, like, I'm out of my body. That's it. And then you go to sleep, and within 30 days, it'll happen. Well, it's true. That's all it takes. And I did that. And, it was the, I forget what year it was, but it was the year that the movie Monster came out. And the reason why I remember that is because the night that it happened, I went to see that movie with my friend Matt. And, so I came back from that movie and it's nighttime and I go to sleep and I say, this time I say, I'm out of my body. Now I'm out of my body. Now I'm getting help getting out of my body. Okay. So as I'm falling asleep, I felt like if you hold your hand up to somebody else's hand, but there's a space, you can still feel the heat of the hand, you know?
Right.
It felt like the heat of hands going in circles above my chest this night when I fell asleep. So I wake up, and this is why I know this is not a night terror. Okay, I had never had night terrors anyway, but this is not a night terror because I got up at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm totally awake. I sit up, I roll over, and as I roll over, in my head, I was like, oh God, it's happening now. And so one of the things that he describes in the book is this phenomenon where it's like your soul is separating from matter and that you feel this like really intense vibration. Well, that's no joke. That's exactly what I felt. And it was overwhelming. But I'm totally awake. I've rolled over and I'm just feeling these waves of the most intense vibrations. I've never felt anything like it in my life. And it was like these waves. It was like I had invited something to help me. I don't know what that is. You know, I wasn't specific. And I, you know, kind of learned my lesson. Whatever it was, it did not feel benevolent at all. It felt like it kept trying to force me out of my body. And I just was like trying with all my strength to call for my father down the hall. And then, you know, eventually, and this took minutes, and that's a long time when you really want something to be over. Sure. I finally got it off of me, but I'll tell you this, like even to this day, it never happens at night, but to this day, sometimes when I take a nap, I'll feel that again. And actually this is kind of funny. My dear one, my love Colin, like he does not like to wake me up because I am not somebody that should be awakened ever. Like I really like my sleep. And one time I was napping and he was like playing video game or whatever on his phone and I felt it. And again, this is like another situation where it's like all my strength. And I was like, help me, help me. And he like looked at me and he looked away and started playing his video again because he didn't even want to bother waking me up. So I had to kind of live through that one. So like that happened. And then, Colin and I lived in Flagstaff, Arizona for a while before we moved up here to Washington. And we lived down the hill from this observatory. I forget what it's called, but it's a Catholic observatory. I think it's the only one in Northern Arizona. And it's a really beautiful campus. It's forested woods or whatever. And so we'd leave our apartment and we had a dog at the time and we'd walk her, up the path and we'd go to this observatory. We'd just go to the nature around it. Anyway, we'd always pass this neighborhood. And I always just got a dark feeling. I just didn't like it. And we were walking back one day. And I told him, I was like, I just feel like somebody's yelling at me. Like every time I come by here, I feel like someone's shouting at me. Like they want something. And the person that I always imagined was like like an average, like 5'10" male, kind of bulky and shaved blonde hair and like blue eyes. And we had found out that there was a cop that was actually gunned down in that spot. There was actually a memorial for him. And so we came home from this walk and I just wanted to draw. I just wanted to draw out this person. And I looked up who that guy was. And that's the person that I drew was that man. And I feel like he was just that. Once I figured out like, that's that person, I was like, he's really upset about how he died. He wants somebody to know what happened to him. You know, there was another time in that house, in that apartment, where we were lying there before going to sleep. And Colin was like, do you feel that? And all of a sudden, like on my face, it was just ice cold and I could not get it off. And I was like, yeah, I can't get it off. And I like waved my hand and then it was gone. There was another time, this one, I felt really violated when I heard about it. I was sleeping and Colin can be kind of a night owl. So he was up doing whatever he was doing. And he picks up on things that I don't pick up on. Like, I think I'm pretty sensitive, but he's sensitive in another way, you know? And he sees, like, I don't really see stuff. I don't see like spirits. I kind of saw a shadow critter, but I don't, you know, like some people see apparitions. Like, I think he'd be the person that sees apparitions. I don't. And I think that's because God knows that would really scare me. I just don't want to see it. But anyway, that this night, like there was this like black, like cloud. There was something up on the ceiling, and Colin had what's it called? You know, they're like, you can get the apps on your phone where you can like communicate with the spirits or whatever,
the EVP
like
recorders
EVP kind of thing. Yeah. So he had something like that, and he was like asking it, you know, what are your intentions here? And all of a sudden, out of my mouth comes, I'm here for the sole purpose of helping.
You said that?
Yeah, I was asleep though. Like, wow. He asked this question, and then that was the answer that came. Direct response to him, but through me. Yeah, that felt really creepy. Like, that made me feel violated because I was like, I'm not open to this. Like, you know, and even now, like in my life, like I'm really trying to like, I pray every day. Like I'm trying to build this relationship with my Lord, you know? So yeah, like, I don't know. This is pretty much everything that's happened to me. And hopefully it's over. I found your show through like, Sasquatch Chronicles.
Okay.
And, now that I'm in the Pacific Northwest, I'm like, well, considering everything else that's happened to me, like, I bet, like, I'm sure, like, I'll probably see a Sasquatch too. Like, that's probably just my lot in life, but I hope not.
Well, if you do, I'll be envious because that's something I would love to see one day.
Yeah.
But, you know, with all those paranormal experiences that you had and stuff, and you mentioned in the beginning when you first started telling these stories about your grandparents, do you think that maybe you are, I don't want to say haunted, but maybe like a family curse or something like that?
I don't know. Oh, there's one more thing I had to tell you. This actually wasn't my experience, it was my mom, so it has to do with the ranch.
Okay.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so my mom, well, actually, so like the way my grandmother passed away, like she ended up in hospice, but my mom was living out there with her. My grandmother was at the end of the hallway that I didn't like. She was in the bedroom off there. My mom was in her bedroom, and my mom woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, the sound of my grandmother screaming, and all the furniture in my grandmother's room was like turned over. My grandmother was little and feeble, and there was no way she could like lift. I could barely lift some of the dressers that were in that room, and I was young and able, you know? And she had been tossed out of the bed, and then quickly her health like just went kaput. She was in hospice, and then she passed away. After my mom had like cleaned up all the property, my mom is on the more paranoid side. So she locks every window. She closes every blind. She is habitual about this kind of stuff. So she told me, like, after the stuff had happened with Drew, I called my mom finally. We hadn't been talking. I called her and I was like, and I just want to let you know this, what happened out there is it really creeped me out. She was like, the day that I left that place and I'll never go back, that I had cleaned and closed the blinds and locked all the windows. I alarmed the house and then I left. When I got into my car, because our car was facing the living room, she said the blinds were up. Like someone was looking at me. I had just closed them and they were all the way up.
Wow.
Totally open. And so I think everybody's sensitive. I think there are some people that just don't want to, that they want to close their mind. And then there's people that have an open mind. And I think that's really what the difference is. I do think that my grandparents, whatever they were experimenting with, I think that kind of unleashed havoc in people's lives that were there that were open-minded. You know, because I don't think my mom's haunted to this day. I don't feel like I'm haunted right now. You know, I feel like I've kind of spent some time battling this stuff, but I don't know if it's a lineage thing. I don't think so. I think everybody has it. I just think some people want to be shut off to it and some people don't.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I agree with you. And there's a lot of things that go on that people just, they either don't want to acknowledge it or, they acknowledge it, but they're scared to contemplate about it. And this kind of stuff is, it's deep. It's really deep. And it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around. That's why we talk about these things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It feels nice to share it too. And I'm really grateful for your program too, because like, you know, I always felt kind of weirded out that like I had all of these experiences, these different experiences, you know, like if you like watch TV or whatever, it's like,
yeah,
this person saw a UFO once and this person had a haunting here, but it's not like this throughout their whole life. But like being familiar with your program, like I realized this was actually really common that people have a lot of experiences in their lifetime.
Yeah.
And on multiple occasions, different things.
Exactly. And that's why I conduct the show the way I conduct it, because I'm not a stranger to the idea of people having multiple experiences throughout their life. And you're always going to have people out there that, you know, they're like, how can one person have so many experiences? Well, people do. And there could be reasons for that. It may not just be that they were in the right place at the right time so many times, but maybe that they actually, there's something to do with them personally that leads to these experiences. There's so many questions and there's so many baffling things to think about when it comes to these types of events that there shouldn't be anything left off the table. And that's why I do the show the way I do it. That's why I don't limit the person that comes on. I let them share exactly what they want to share, because I think that is what helps a lot of other people kind of make sense of what they experience. Because, you know, I've seen it myself so many times throughout online community and stuff. You know, people are like, oh, how can one person have so many experiences? And it, but yet they do. But it's funny because sometimes I was in some kind of forum. I forget where it was. This was a while ago, but they were talking about this very thing. And they said about, you know, people having all these paranormal experiences and all these different types of stuff. But the very person that was complaining about it went on to talk about how they had a lot of miraculous things happen in their life. And I'm like, well, why is it any different that you can have miraculous things happen in your life where you saw angels and your body was healed and there's a couple other things, yet somebody who has hauntings in their life and maybe something that's not as, you know, happy-go-lucky as miracles in their life, they can't be telling the truth. And so it's one of those things where it's frustrating for me sometimes to deal with, but I won't ever change the way I do the show, because there's so many people out there that have those kind of experiences where they're one after another, and it's like they need to be able to have an outlet.
Yeah, sure, totally. And yeah, actually, so the way I came to God, or became a Christian, was Colin and I were at this church in New Mexico. I forget what it's called. It's like it's a really famous church. There's actually two on the complex, and it's known because the Spaniards, when they came here as conquistadors, they had gone through this area and they had found a cross. They had picked it up they had gone on their way. And when they came back, there was a cross there again. So they built this church, and this church is known to like heal the sick. So like when you go to this church, there's all these like leg braces and stuff on the side of the wall. And there's all these pictures of kids that, you know, people are praying for healing and everything. Well, we went into this church, or I went into this church, and he was like walking the dog. And I was looking at Mary, the statue. It's like a regular, like side of the road, you know, this, the ceramics, shop that you see on the side of the road, like on the highway. And they've got like the guy leaning up against a burro or like a cactus. And then there's the statue of Mary. This was a regular, typical painted ceramic statue of Mary. And someone had shoved a plastic bouquet of roses in her arms. And the way the light was coming in through the front doors of the church, it was casting the shadow, but the shadow it was casting was the exact profile of Christ with the crown of thorns. And I like jumped up, I ran and got Colin. I was like, you have to come see this. Somebody else has to see this. It can't just be me. And that was kind of like what led me to Christ was that moment.
Really?
'Cause I was like, that's impossible.
Wow.
Well, yeah, it's like, first of all, I always felt really connected to God, and like, you know, and I've had all these experiences, like, you know, like I really truly feel like I encountered a demon, and I feel like if I encountered a demon, then the opposite is also true, you know? And then when I saw that, like the shadow of Christ from Mary, which is a whole poetic thing in and of itself, like,
sure.
You know, I was just like, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. I was born and I am meant to be a Christian. And, you know, there's a reason why, like, when you call to him in times of darkness, or you're being haunted, there's a reason why that works. And so I just finally decided to trust it. And so that's why I became this way. But yeah, like, I think that, like, I hope that people become more open-minded, and people that are open that encounter these things that, you know, that they'll also become like open to Christ, because if you are haunted, like trust in him and it will go away. And there's a reason why it works.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
It's really cool to hear that. I mean, you know, people have these different stories of how they, you know, found Jesus, and, you know, it's just interesting to hear people's different stories, because everybody's got a story, you know? And, mm-hmm. you know, I've heard things like just recently, friends of ours are missionaries, and they are here in the States for a little bit, but they go to Egypt for their work. And they told me that, and they didn't tell me, they told my wife, and my wife told me that when they were over there, they saw a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of crazy stuff that here in America, people don't talk about it. I'm convinced that it happens here, but people don't talk about it. And we live our lives in such a way where we have these blinders on, where we probably don't even notice it half the time. But like this one instance, this guy who's a director of whatever they do over there, this Christian organization, was cursed by somebody else, and he got deathly ill, deathly sick. And he's in the hospital, and he sees Jesus. Like he said, I saw mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. And at that very moment that he saw Jesus Christ, the guy who cursed him was at work and dropped over dead. It's like,
whoa.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, when you hear these stories, it's like, wow. Like, but you know, here in America, we don't really talk about these kind of things. I think we have a lot of blinders on, and we don't really acknowledge it happens around us. And it's just, this kind of stuff is very real. And, you know, people like you who experience these different types of things and stuff, it just takes people like you coming forward and sharing your story. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, honestly. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, Amy, I will talk to you later. If you have anything else you'd like to share with me, feel free to get a hold of me.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Bye,
bye,
Tony.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, there are three things you can do to help support the show. You can go to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review. You can go to patreon.com/theconfessionals. That's patreon.com/theconfessionals, and sign up to become a monthly contributor of the show. Or you can go and highlight that link that you're listening to the show on right now, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, I don't care, the website. Highlight the link that you're listening to the show right now and go ahead and share it on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I don't care where it is. just share it around, and that could help the show out a great deal as well. I also want to say sorry to Wes Germer. I was going to bring him on the show, but I just forgot to call him up and record with him. So maybe we'll get to you next week, man. I'm sorry about that. But until then, everybody, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off.